Hey there, folks over at MTGcast.com and CommanderCast.com. It's time for another episode of Rivals Duel. And we're going to go a little bit more interpretive with this opening, inspired very much by Christopher Nolan's new movie, Interstellar. Today, Noel will be playing the first half of the movie. He will be intelligent, well-spoken, charming, and interesting. And I will be the tail end of the movie. Flashy, loud, confusing, and utterly stupid.
I have not seen that movie yet, but I'm sure the seven people who have find that joke hilarious.
I'm sure that half of them got offended.
Yeah,
it's a smart movie that really... Or it's a stupid movie that really wants you to believe it's smart. It's been stuck in my craw all week, and this is where I go to complain about things.
Fair enough. Okay. Today's kind of a fun day, because it's... I figured out, because of our recording schedule and just the way the card image gallery dropped, we are probably the last set review you'll hear.
Awesome. Yes. But don't run away, Judd. Don't go away just yet. We've got a lot of stuff to get to before we get to any part of reviewing Commander 2015. Is it 15 or 14?
This is 2014. This is definitely 2014.
Well, it's just that the core sets are a year ahead, right?
Yep, but that's because they sell those all year long. But, I agree, it's stupid that... Yeah, anyway.
Alright, so, yes, we will be doing our set review of Commander 2014 today, everything except for the generals, which we've already talked about, and we're going to be going in the full, like, spoiler image the image gallery on the site from old cards, so if you want to follow it along at home, open it there. But before we do that, we have a bunch of, we'll talk about what's up with us, and then we have a bunch of emails to get to. So anything new happened with you, Noel, other than playing with these new commander decks?
Okay, so I made it through an entire game and a half before I started taking apart and tinkering with these decks.
Okay.
I now have one of the, like, unlike the Commander 2013 generals, which are still all sitting in a pile waiting for me to build something out of one of them, I already have one off the new Commander 2014 generals. I built Duretti almost immediately.
I think a lot of people built Duretti almost immediately.
Well, it's fun to see, like, before, if you're a new mono brown, you were best to be blue based because you had all these kind of, like, or blue red, and they've never really given us a blue red artifact general.
Yeah, that's fair.
So, for me, it was like, I want a mono brown or mostly brown commander deck. Who do I want to use? And then this fell in my lap and had half the cards I wanted for it in it, so.
Yeah, and Duretti's, he's amazing at that. I played a total of 3 games with, the pre-constructed decks before my roommates were like, okay, enough of this, we're done playing with these training wheel decks, but, Noel, how did your game go? Who was playing what, and how did it go?
The game I got to play with the real decks, I was playing the black one, and I played against the green one, the blue one, and the white one.
Okay, that's super cool. So, were you playing Omnixilis, or were you playing, Geesa?
We all ran with the commander generals. And I have to say, this is going to sound terrible, I have a new respect for Frailes. That card actually does not suck nearly as much as we thought it did.
Okay, so you're going to have to explain this.
Okay, so we got on the whole, you know, it's crappy ramp that just goes from 5 to 7, and why do you ever want to go from 5 to 7? On the other hand, it puts out a dude every turn. And you know what dudes do? They block. They carry equipment. They can attack when it gets right down to it. They can protect Frailes and let her draw, like, 3 or 4 cards.
But by comparison to the white one and the black one, her dudes are not very good.
The black one, though, because what you do with Omnixilis secretly is roll him down, roll him up, roll him down, roll him up, roll him down, roll him up. So you get a dude every other turn.
Yeah, I was going to say, I also played the black deck, and the one game I played with Ob, he was like my little demon pooping factory. Like, that's all he did.
Yep. Like, I don't know if anyone's activated the ultimate on him yet, but really it's more roll him down, roll him up, roll him down, roll him up, roll him down, roll him up.
Yeah. I was actually, there was some times that I wished my opponents would attack Ob just so he could die, so I wouldn't have to waste a turn rolling him up again, and I could just play him again and roll him down.
Yep, and no one will do you that favor. Same thing with Duretti at one counter.
Yeah. So who won at that game?
Not me, but I can't remember who.
Okay.
Oh, I do remember, actually. It was the white deck, because if you leave the white deck alone, like, the blue deck, The bootleg I've seen have one of two things happen. It either goes off and is just a thing from the beginning, but with the other four being so token-based and so capable of explosive things, if that blue deck stumbles at all, it does nothing till it loses.
Yeah.
And so that's what happened to the blue deck, and then finally, I think I got eliminated second, and then the green and the white deck. And that white deck, if you leave it alone, just becomes stupid.
Oh, yeah. That was my experience, too. I played three games. The first one was us all playing with the Planeswalker Generals, and it was Duretti. It was the red deck, the black deck, and the white deck. And the white deck ended up winning because Duretti got tucked early.
Ooh.
And that, and then from there, it was kind of me and the white deck at the table. And then the red deck started getting ahead, so we beat on him some more. And then by then, the white deck was so far ahead, there was nothing to be done. Then we played another game where I was against Freylaze, where I did not get any newfound respect for her at all. And I was against Felden, the other red general, and then I was playing Geesa. And what I discovered was, is that although each of these decks came with two generals, two new generals, I should say, they were really meant to be played with one or the other. And the problem is that unless you're, like, good at scrutinizing the deck, you don't really know until you start playing the deck which one is meant to lead it. So the Freylaze deck is clearly meant to be led by Azuri. Not Freylaze the Planeswalker, but Azuri the legendary creature, the old one. The white deck it's just fine with the Planeswalker at the lead. The blue deck I had no experience with. The red deck was clearly meant to have Duretti at the head of it. It was fine when it wasn't Duretti, but every time it was Duretti as the general and he was actually able to stay on the field, it was miles and miles ahead of any other deck at that table. That mono-red deck is absolutely vicious.
Yes, there's a lot of just powerful good stuff in that red deck.
Mm-hmm.
Both reprints and new cards.
Absolutely. It is head and shoulders the strongest of the five possible decks you can buy. So if you're planning on just playing these right out of the box, I strongly suggest you get the red deck. But if you get the black deck, don't use Ob as your commander, use Geesa, because it turns out she's friggin' scary as hell.
Yes, Geesa is very scary in that black deck.
Yeah, and there's a lot of stuff that gives you benefit when you sacrifice or gives you big stuff to sacrifice, and I ended up having very, very good games. Both of the games that I played with her as the general, one of them I won and one of them I didn't, I think, but the one that I didn't win, I still did a lot of stuff and was commanding the board. It's to the point that I'm in the process of rebuilding Prosh now, and I'm considering putting Geesa in as a potential token generator, because she just generates that many zombies.
Fair enough. Yeah. So these decks are all super fun, though. And I will say, like, I've seen some places do Commander Sealed events, where you randomly, it's a certain price point tournament, but you pay, and then you get one of the Commander decks chosen at random, and then that's your deck for the tournament.
Okay.
Or they'll do, like, the commander deck and three packs of whatever sets we have in the store, or stuff like that.
All right, that's kind of fun.
Just kind of, they're fun to play with. I described it as where normally commander games feel like you're running around with, you know, very, very powerful tools. This feels like we're chasing each other with Nerf swords.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's fun, and it's wacky, and, like, it's squirt guns and Nerf swords magic. Can we make that a term?
Let's not.
I like that.
Moving on. Our email or our inbox has got kind of bombarded with emails, huh?
Which means a total of three, but that's beside the point.
Total of like five. By our standards, we don't usually get this much fan mail.
Yeah, this is true. Like, yay for everyone who felt the need to talk to us and send us stuff in. Thank you. Again, we get these, a lot of times we get them right after they're relevant, so we're just getting the emails from, the Let's Build episode now.
Yeah, absolutely.
But we did get one. I wanted to go back to one.
Well, I think we got them because we asked for suggestions on the last Let's Build episode.
Could have been it.
Yeah. So, yeah, so do we want to start with the one asking about the Commander decks before we go into the Let's Build ones?
Actually, I've got one from Taysa first.
Okay, sure.
Let me find the... I'm trying to find the one that the guy sent me about Taysa.
I got it if you want.
Yeah, go ahead.
So this is from Nathan. He's a fellow Canadian. Woohoo! And Nathan wants to know, I'm a new Taysa fan, though not enough to have her as a general right now. She's in my Esper Zombies and Humans deck as part of the 99. Topic suggestion. When Sheldon Menery appears on various podcasts, he'll often advocate for you to not play with tutor or library searching cards in EDH. So he wants us to argue over whether Commander is better without tutoring or whether it's better with tutoring.
I feel like we may have had this conversation before, but I'm willing to have it again.
Do we want to make it a full argument, or do we want to have a short micro-argument right now?
I don't think we're going to disagree that much. So you go first, and I'll tell you if it's worth stopping.
Okay, I think Commander's better with tutoring. I think that if you don't have tutoring in it, I will say I acknowledge the downsides to tutoring. If you're playing with rude players who are making you, who don't know how to time their tutors and stuff like that, then they will, then it occupies a lot of time at the at the table, and the turns are slower, and then it's magic, the shuffling, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But if you know, playing against someone who knows their deck, and knows what they're looking for, then I think it's way better, mostly because I think people would just run redundant effects, so I don't think that tutoring does anything too big to the consistency. It also allows you, in cases where someone is, like, going off and stuff, to fetch an and. It's not just, like, I'm gonna tutor to win. I'm gonna tutor to stop someone from doing something unfair, or it's the entire way that certain decks are run, like there are tutor generals. So I think that trying to remove, I would no sooner remove tutoring from Commander than I would remove tutoring from Magic.
Okay, fair enough. I have a more temperate position than that, but I'm actually also pro-tutoring for a couple different reasons. And actually what it is I'm anti-tutor in some very specific things. I'm very anti-tutor when it comes to, I have a deck that's secretly a win condition, that I just go and build the same three-card machine every time, and the rest of my deck is tutors in denial. Boo. That's boring. Go away.
Yeah, but your problem with that isn't with tutors, it's with unfun deck design.
Yeah. I like tutors in that it lets you run, like, there's a lot of decks I will play kind of Silver Bullet, Commander decks, like, I like being able to say, you know, here are my two pieces of graveyard hate, here are my ways to dig them up. Yep. I also like the fact that tutors let you build around a card that's not your general. I have a friend of mine who jokes that her general is doubling season.
Sounds about right.
And it's like, well, Gave's technically the general in it, but really my general is doubling season. And we let her play with doubling season as the general one time, and that was a poor choice.
And then we did it once.
Yep. Don't need to do that again. So there's that, and like my issues with tutoring are the same with Eric's. If you're going to tutor and take forever, or you're going to crack that fetch on the end of the opponent to your right's turn for maximum value, stop it.
Yeah.
This does not need to happen.
My other problem is that another big issue I have with taking away tutors is kind of a similar problem I have with the French ban list. It doesn't affect all colors equally. So if you took away tutors, if you just said no searching libraries, if you're like, I'm playing Stranglehold Rules, Commander, blue gets a huge advantage over everyone else. Blue and some of black. Because suddenly all of green's land fetching is useless. All of white's like, I'm gonna tutor for equipment, or I'm gonna play stuff like land tax to try and scrape up what card advantage I can. All of that goes away. And, I think that those kinds of cards have a very legitimate place in equalizing the color pie a little bit. So I don't like seeing them go.
Yeah, and I think that, like, I've never had a problem with fetch lands. I've never had a problem with, you know, land tutors. Ferdlit is one of my favorite cards in Commander. I have no problem with land fetches at all. So that's why I have a problem with no tutor. I like tutor with asterisks. Like, I don't like tutoring for value, where it's just like, I'm gonna tutor up the best cards, or tutoring for some combo engine, which is boring.
Yeah. My answer to Sheldon Menery would be that instead of playing without tutors, that I think he should make a anti-tutor deck. I think he should make the Stranglehold Avonmind sensor deck.
I think he has one.
Yeah, well then, there you go.
Anyway, let's hop into the next one. We got a ton of Let's Build suggestions, and they're all great.
We got one email to get to first.
Oh, that's right. Sorry.
Yeah. So, before we get on to the several Let's Build suggestions that you guys want to hear us do, I have an email here from Luke, and Luke says, "Hey guys, very fun episode. I was wondering if you guys would do a small segment next time on which of the four generals in the Red Commander deck you would be most likely to play and why. Personally, I think Duretti is the best, but I've seen arguments for all of them. Also, now that all of the deck lists are out, do you think they push the red deck a little much? First of all, do you think they push the red deck too much?"
I think against the other four, the red deck is slightly ahead, but not entirely. Like, you know, I think that this is going to come down to play skill much more than it will power level of the decks.
Yeah. And I would also say that with all the smack talk everyone says about mono red, I'm okay with the five precons, the mono red one being head and shoulders above the others. I like it.
I wouldn't even say it's head and shoulders above. I'd say that it's good, and I'd say it's probably the easiest one to play out of the box and have a good successful result with. I don't know that it's that much better than the other four.
I don't think that there's any other deck that can do something as scary as a turn two Wyrmcoil.
True.
And this deck can.
Yeah,
so.
But you're kind of living in magical Christmas land to get turn two Wyrmcoil with this deck.
Yeah, you're probably living in magical Christmas land to get a turn two Wyrmcoil. You are not living in magical Christmas land to get a turn three to four Wyrmcoil, though.
Okay, yeah, you could get... Yeah, I can see done with turn three or four.
Very easily.
Well, yeah, four is pretty easy, actually, but...
Yeah. Or a mere Battlesphere or something else equally cool.
Yeah.
But of the four generals, I think that we both agree with Luke, right?
Yeah, I think Duretti, especially with that deck, Duretti's the most powerful. If you're going to build your own deck, really you have pretty much, I would say, two good options in Duretti and Bosch. I think Tuk-Tuk is going to be more theme decked or interesting than good, and I think Bosch is probably better as part of a Duretti deck than as his own, but I could absolutely see playing Bosch plus all the ramp.
Okay. What about all the Felden hate? What do you think of Felden?
Oh, I said Duretti and Felden are both good.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I thought you said Bosch.
Oh, I'm sorry. Duretti and Felden are both very good. They do very different things. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll talk about some of the fun things I've heard about with these decks, but, Felden can do some pretty broken stuff. And Duretti, I actually built the Duretti deck, and I'm having a lot of fun with it.
I want to make a fun Felden deck. I'm really looking forward to it. I think he's super, super fun. However, of the two, I would build Duretti, even though it's more artifact-focused than red-focused. And the reason why is because when you're playing Duretti, you can run a lot of backup Duretti effects. You can run that new... the new Living Death for artifacts that we'll talk about later. You can run Goblin Welder, Trash for Treasure, etc. But the problem is that with Felden, you're running a mono-red reanimator deck, which is really cool and totally awesome and out of left field and one of the most fun things you can probably do. But you can't really back up Felden, so you're very all-in on your general.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my answer. I think that if you want to make a really solid, good deck, Duretti, you're right, Duretti is the best. But I think that if you want to show that you have the biggest cojones at the table, you wouldn't build Felden, you'd build Tuk-Tuk.
Tuk-Tuk.
Tuk-Tuk YOLO!
Tuk-Tuk-Tuk-Tuk-Tuk-Tuk.
I'm ordering the Final Fortune in the Last Chance. I'm gonna make the Tuk Tuk You Only Live Once deck.
That will be a fun deck one time, but,
Alrighty, so, let's move on and talk about some of these Let's Build suggestions. We aren't obviously gonna do any Let's Builds right here on this podcast. However, we will give you a little preview of the ones that have been suggested to us so that you know that these episodes are probably coming up sometime in the near future.
Yeah, these are actually really kind of, these are, a lot of people send us really fun examples of really bad commanders. So, this first one's from Kevin. Kevin said, "Hey, Eric and Noel, first I want to say that you guys are definitely the best Commander podcast around. Keep up the good work."
Aww.
Please don't tell Commander Cast that you said that, because they host our podcast.
Yeah, thank you, Kevin. You're warm in our hearts.
Yep. Second, my suggestion for the Lex build is Dio-chan Artful Beauty. I feel like she exemplifies everything that's great about Commander, politics, destruction, and mono-red. Maybe you guys can have some fun building around this general. I've actually built Dio-chan before, so that one will be fun to play with.
Yeah, I've never built Dio-chan, but Mono Red is a fun little playground that I'm very familiar with, so I would be excited to do a Dio-chan deck. I've heard some of the silly stuff you can do with her and some of the fun stuff you can do with her. She seems really... I think that if you build Dio-chan, you go, like, full politics. But, yeah, no, I would definitely love building that deck, and I'm looking forward to that episode.
Okay, why don't you get the next one, then I'll get the one that came today.
Yeah, sure. So our next one is from Doug. Doug says, I beg you, sir, please do a Let's Build on Volrath. He's my all-time favorite MTG character. I've built a mono-black ramp big stompy deck roughly 3 times and promptly torn it apart. I've never found that sweet combination of 99 cards and Volrath. He is ridiculously strong, general, because you can one-hit kill people, da-da-da-da, but I can't get him consistent. Basically, Doug wants us not to build a fun Volrath deck. He wants us to help him figure out how to make Volrath work.
Well, that's what we did with the last one, too, so...
So it's very possible we could do it. And Volrath, of all the cards that was suggested to us, Volrath was the only one I had to look up.
I knew what Volrath did, but not for reasons I want to admit.
Have you tried building a Volrath deck?
No, but I thought about building some 5-color Weatherlight crew deck, and...
Oh, no.
Using my original plan was to use all old-faced cards.
Ah.
Don't do that.
Yeah, no.
Don't. Turns out there's a lot of utility in the last 12 years of Magic, and don't do that.
So, yeah, Volrath, we'll talk about him on the episode that we do him, but he's obviously a big character from Magic. A lot of his cards are good, like Volrath Stronghold is amazing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, I would be down to try and make Volrath a good Volrath deck. He's a little he's never going to be amazing. But I think you could definitely get some good games out of them.
Yeah. Let's go to the next one, I guess. This next one's from Matt. Hey guys, first I want to say that I'm a big fan of the podcast. It's become one of my go-to podcasts to listen to about Magic, and it makes my hour and a half commute a lot more enjoyable when there's a new episode. First of all, ouch on that.
I was going to say, our episodes need to be longer for his sake.
Yeah. Like, we try to stay under an hour, which of course we never do, but we try. Yeah. I just finished listening to the Let's Build Lord of Trestlehorn episode. It's always fun to listen to you come up with awesome ideas for decklists of bad commanders. Bad in quotes. At the end of the episode, you ask for other suggestions, and I have a suggestion of the worst legendary creature ever printed. Rakdos the Defiler. This guy's not only my favorite card and artwork ever, but also my favorite EDH journal I've ever made. He sent us a deck list that I'm not going to read right now. I know that you guys definitely receive a lot of suggestions, but ask yourselves, are there any suggestions that are as bad as Rakdos the Defiler?
I wouldn't call Rakdos bad. I would call him dramatic.
Yep, I would call him a build around. There are some hoops from which we have to jump through to make Rakdos work.
He's expensive. He destroys a lot of your board progress. There is definitely a lot of stuff you have to do to make a Rakdos the Defiler deck work. However, if you want to sit down and reveal your general and have your opponents know that you will be salting the earth and burning their crops to the ground, Rakdos the Defiler is a good way to announce your intentions.
Float all the mana, cast Jockle Hops, Rakdos.
Alright, yeah, no, we will definitely be looking at those three as potential episodes in the future, just because you guys asked for them. So, like, me and Noel get together and like to talk about stuff, but we will always be happier to talk about what you guys want to hear, because we do this podcast for you guys. So if you suggested it, we will make sure that those three episodes get done somewhere down the line.
Yeah, so our obligatory front leading over, let's hop into the shiny new cards from Commander 2015.
Bye, Judd!
Yep, see you later.
So yeah, Commander 2014. Yeah, let's do a shooting from the hip set review. Just relax, scrolling down the card image gallery.
Just for the record, we retain the reason to talk about a card, even if it's a reprint, if we feel the need to talk about it.
Absolutely. You know what? I'm not even gonna, this is just gonna be discussing the cards. We're too late to the party on the set review, I think, in terms of everyone who wants to buy these decks is already gonna buy these decks. So let's just, like, discuss
talk about
the cards
that make us happy, yeah. Speaking of those, let's talk about Angel of Dire Hour, the first card.
Angel of Dire, just before we skip past it, I'm glad Adhokar Valkyrie got a reprint. Yeah. That card is it's an underappreciated gem.
Yeah, more people should play that card. I was glad it was in Modern Masters, I'm glad it's here too. Yeah. Angel of the Dire Hour is white and 5, for a 5/4 angel with flash and flying, and when it enters the battlefield, if you cast it from your hand, exile all attacking creatures.
So remember that Gisa deck I talked about playing?
Yeah.
I got blown out hard by Alpha Striking the white deck, and he's just like, and Angel of the Dire Hours.
Surprise.
I'm like, God damn it!
Yeah, this card is sweet for a lot of reasons. It's balanced. I love that they're putting powerful ETB triggers with the phrase, if you cast it from your hand, mm-hmm. so that it's not, you know, because you can imagine how unfun this would be with Deadeye Navigator if it didn't have that.
It also makes it playable with Kalia.
Yep.
Yeah, there's a lot of reasons it's a lot better with that enter the battle or enter from your hand clause. Obviously, reanimating it isn't nearly as good.
And
if but,
you cast it, too, so no show-and-tell shenanigans either.
Exactly. But, yeah, no, this card is scary.
Yeah, like, this makes me real hesitant to Alpha Strike a white deck.
This allows white decks to play like they're blue and just have a bunch of open mana and be like, so, do you think I run Angel of the Dire Hour? Do you think I do that?
Do you bet I got it? Do you think I got it? I think I got it. Do you think I got it?
yeah, no, this card is cool. And that, a lot about this card works. The art is kind of generic, but still pretty good. And the flavor text, she arrived like a meteorite and the enemy fell in a shockwave of holy vengeance. Yeesh!
Yeah, I'd love to, I wish they had this card in foil. This card is really, would be a really pretty foil.
Oh yeah. This art would be absolutely gorgeous. Moving on. Angelic Field Marshal, the White Lieutenant. Have you seen this card do anything scary?
Speaking of, angels I'm less excited about.
Oh yeah. Okay.
It's white and 2 for a 3/3. It has the Lieutenant mechanic, which says as long as you control your commander, in this case, it gets +2/+2 in vigilance. So you can have a 5/5 vigilance for 4 if you have your commander out, or a 3/3 for 4.
No, it gets +2/+2 and creatures you
control. Oh, and everything I have has vigilance. Okay. That's decidingly better, but still
yeah.
Kinda, eh.
Yeah, for 4 mana, it's not bad. I will say that every time I saw it on the board and I considered it scary enough that I blew it up before my opponent could get their commander out. Because
yeah.
I was just like, yeah, I really don't want to deal with all of that.
Yeah, and being able to have all your guys be pseudo walls is fine. You know, I can see it here in some kind of big white or white blue deck where you have a lot of stuff that's just designed to play defense and want to still be able to attack with it.
Mm-hmm.
This being okay, but like the white Winnie deck that this deck kind of turns into.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't really care if you guys have vigilance.
Not really. Not really at all.
Yeah.
Moving down.
The offerings. These actually make me kind of happy because I like cards that play politics. This one being the least exciting of them.
I was gonna say there's one particular offering that makes me extraordinarily happy, but we'll get to that.
Yeah. There's this one is kind of meh.
Yeah, this is the one where you choose an opponent, you and that player each put 3/1/1 white spirit tokens with flying, and then you choose another opponent, you gain 2 life for each creature you control, and that player gains 2 life for each creature they control. It's instant speed, so you can surprise someone with 3/1/1s, and you can surprise, I think the coolest thing you'll ever do is give someone who's about to die 3/1/1 blockers and give them a bunch of life to just make the attacking player go like, what the hell, man?
And that is none of my business.
Yeah. But other than that, there's nothing super remarkable about it. We've got another Cathar's Crusade. I might be a little biased. I don't know if there's some people out there who are like, I need a Cathar's Crusade and I can't find it anywhere. But I could not stop opening up Cathar's Crusades at Avacyn Restored pre-releases. So I just have like I'm lousy with the friggin' thing. So as soon as I saw another Cathar's Crusade, I'm like, oh, look, it's in the new border. Hurrah.
Woo. Let's talk about a great word that's on a card with a wall of text.
Comeuppance.
Yes,
it is one word.
I wonder how many times they had to go, is that spelled correctly?
Yeah.
That's spelled correctly.
There's no way that's right. there's not like a dash. It's not like Spider-Man, because the dash is important.
Yeah.
Come up into 4-mana instant. Prevent all damage that would be dealt to you and planeswalkers you control this turn by sources you don't control. Stop. If damage from a creature source is prevented this way, comeuppance deals that much damage to that creature. Stop. If damage from a non-creature source is prevented this way, comeuppance deals that much damage to that source's it's a Dern mirror.
So, the thing that everyone forgets about this card, despite that wall of text, doesn't actually protect your creatures.
Yeah, you and planeswalkers you control. It's not a fog.
Yeah, so the trick is not to block and do this, it's don't block and do this.
Yeah, just welcome the damage. This is another, the white deck's gonna play like the blue deck, just like, come on, I can take it.
Yeah, I'm at 7 life, guess what I'm doing.
I should totally make a white spell slinger deck at some point after this.
Could be kind of fun. You could totally make a red-white, a red-white deck that plays like a blue deck.
Yeah! No, I want mono-white. I want mono-white Spellslinger. Who's the general for mono-white Spellslinger?
Jaren, King of Khajeldor. The one that whenever you take damage, get that many 1-1 soldiers.
That's not terrible. Okay, moving down, we have the Legacy Chase card!
Yep. Well, one of the Legacy Chase cards.
I think this is going to be the big one.
Yeah, this is cool, though. Like,
it is very cool. And the art, I appreciate the fact that the art makes it look like it's a reprint. It looks like old Magic art.
It kind of does. Like that. This is Containment Priest. This is a bear. It's a white and 1/2/2 with flash. And then its hate bear ability is if a non-token creature would enter the battlefield and it wasn't cast, exile it instead.
This shuts down like a scary number of decks if you stop and think about it for more than 2 seconds.
Yep.
Like this. Okay, let's see what goes. Kalia goes away.
Yep. Avenger of Zendikar gets eaten. Deadeye Navigator gets shut down.
Does not do anything to Yoira, so remember that. However, if Yoira is running Sneak Attack and Show and Tell, those now do nothing.
Yep.
Bloodghast, Reassembling Skeleton, and that other new guy.
Bloodsoaked Champion.
Bloodsoaked Champion all go away.
Yep.
It's just like, gross!
Not to mention telling Rune of the Hidden Realms to go away and come back later.
Yeah, exactly. This is, I think that this is gonna be a must run in white decks for a while. It is a symmetrical effect, so be careful what cards you're playing when you get it out. But yeah, no, it's, it shuts down a lot of stuff.
Yes, it does.
Moving down.
Deployed to the front!
Is this a new card or an old card?
This is a new card, and I just want to take a second and say, we at the Aperture Testing Facility have worked our social corner next to the blue portal.
That is exactly what it looks like, isn't it? Looks
so like, bad art. There's this orange portal in the sky dropping soldiers.
You know what this is? This is the, this looks like the Aperture Science staff LARPing event.
Yeah. Anyone who was waiting for that Portal 2 Magic crossover.
Yeah, no, but it's just deployed to the front. It's a 7-mana sorcery, put X-1-1 white soldier creature tokens onto the battlefield, where X is the number of creatures on the battlefield. Meh.
Yeah, it's a haymaker, but it's really expensive.
Really expensive. And kind of utterly boring, too.
Yeah.
Fel the Mighty.
Is neat.
I like this card. I think this is a cool new card. 5-mana, destroy all creatures, power greater than target creature's power. This really rewards you for playing a white weenie deck. If you're all in on a bunch of white weenies, you can wipe the board of everything except for them.
Yeah, White Sun Zenith, this kill everything except your Ewit swing.
Yeah.
I love the flavor text on this one.
They had it coming.
Yep.
And this is a specific reference, right? Because I'm pretty sure that Thistwick is a location on Innistrad, right?
It sounds like it. I'm not sure, but it sure certainly sounds like it. The one thing, momentary rules tip on this, if you cast this and then destroy the creature, then it sucks.
Oh, they destroy it in response because there's no target? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, that would suck. Yeah. But yeah, no, this is a very, very cool, cool card.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's super flavorful. I think it's super fun.
Yeah. Speaking of cards that aren't super flavorful but are god-awfully powerful, let's talk about Hallowed Spirit Keeper.
Okay. Once again, we're skipping by a reprint that I like, but I just want to point out, I like that Wizards has this I like that Wizards has decided to put a Grand Abolisher in the hands of every EDH player.
Yes, Gift of Estates is in here too, so for those of you looking for white card advantage, there it goes.
Mm. But yeah, no, I'm a huge, huge fan of Grand Abolisher. I think that, two white has never looked so good, so I'm glad to see him.
Mm-hmm.
But moving on.
This card is gross. Keeper.
Yeah, I'll tell you my story with Hallowed Spirit Keeper, okay? I read the text. I went, okay, it's got vigilance. And then I went, okay, when it dies, put X11 white spirit creature tokens with flying onto the battlefield, where X is the number of creature cards in your graveyard. I'm like, you know what? That's not bad. Like, for, like, Titan mana and stuff like that, that's pretty good. I'm sure it's a... And then I looked, I'm like, 3-2? It's a friggin' 3-2? This is terrible. And then I looked up, because somehow I missed the fact when I first looked at this card. I thought it cost, like, 5-7. This is... 3 mana.
Yeah, this thing can be just gross. Can you imagine this in something like Corridor?
I can imagine this in a lot of nasty things. The best thing about this is that it triggers when it dies, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's in the graveyard when it dies.
Yeah, so it will replace itself.
It will replace itself, and it will replace your entire field if it's out and someone Wrath of God.
Yeah, it's the coolest Wrath insurance you'll ever have, like...
Ugh.
This card's super powerful.
Super, super strong card. Oh my god, Taysa Dex.
Yes, more Taysa Dex.
Alright, going down, we've got a couple good reprints. We have more Kemba. More Kemba is good Kemba.
More Kemba. Core Sanctifiers is vastly overrated. Marshall Koo is pretty good. Mentor of the Meek. More white card draw.
Mobilization, that's a strong card.
Yep. Nomad's Assembly is not nearly as good as you think it is. Oblation is good. Return to Dust sees a lot of play now because it gets rid of exile things, so you can get rid of gods.
I'm sorry, I'm giggling.
Am I going too fast?
No, I just know what the next card is.
Sacred Mesa and Ponies.
They reprinted Ponies! This is the weirdest... I had this card played against me forever ago at, like, a college game. I was just sitting in a college playing Magic with the guys there, and I saw this card, and I'm like, this is the weirdest worded, like, strangest design card I've ever seen, and they reprinted it, and they gave you Pegasus tokens, which is hilarious. Can I mention how much I love the double-sided tokens? Because I love double-sided tokens.
Yes, I like that our tokens have more tokens.
Yes. I heard you like tokens, so we put tokens on the back of your tokens so you could represent creatures while you represent creatures.
Yep. It also does a great job of teaching people you can't turn a token face down.
Mm-hmm. I like Sacred Mesa because it made me giggle.
Mm-hmm.
Just to see that particular blast from the past.
Yep.
And I think we're pretty much it on the new cards, right?
Yeah, I think that's white.
Yep, we got a reprint of Sun Titan, so if you're looking for a Sun Titan, this is a really good way to get a hold of them. And now we're into blue, and I know for a fact there is exactly, like, one card in this entire thing I care about. So, Noel, why don't you take it away?
The blue cards are kind of underwhelming, but we will hit the greatest hits. Aether Gale's kind of neat, because if you need a blue hex, here it is.
Yep.
Blue, and 3 return 6 target non-land permanents to their owner's hand. Remember, you actually have to have 6 permanents out to cast this, which in multiplayer isn't that hard, but still.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where it's like, I don't know, this looks to me like the world's worst Cyclonic Rift.
Yeah, this card would be fine if they hadn't just reprinted Cyclonic Rift in it, too.
Yeah, exactly. Breaching Leviathan is a new card, right?
Yep. He costs a lot.
That being said, I'm always pro more Leviathans and Krakens. I like seeing big blue things.
Every time we have one of these, you say, this is a blue card I would play, and I'm tempted to, if I ever get bored, really bored, go back and find all the blue cards you'd play and put them in a deck together.
No, I'm not saying I would play the Breaching Leviathan. I like giant aquatic monsters. I'm a big fan of H.P. Lovecraft and the Cthulhu mythos. I like the idea of huge, terrifying monsters living just under the surface of the ocean. I would never play a Kraken deck.
This is kind of a cool card. Like, if it didn't cost a million mana, I'd be in. Like, tapping all the non-blue creatures and then don't untap during their controller's next untap step. It's basically just two free shots with your blue aggro Talram the Sky Summoner deck.
That's pretty good, but it's just too much to pay for, you know, sleep.
Yeah.
And the art on this guy isn't even particularly cool. He's eating like a dragon. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't even have reach. What? No flavor. He is a 9/9, though, and that is a fair-sized beat stick.
Yep. Let's see, scrolling down, there's that Cyclo Rift we talked about.
Cackling Counterpart got a reprint, and that is, I think, a hugely underrated card.
Yeah, I mean, it's not bad. People will forget about it till it's way too late in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets to surprise kill people.
Absolutely. Just double clone your own thing is pretty good, especially at, I'm pretty sure that's instant speed. Yes, it is.
Let's see.
Domineering Will. This is a new card, isn't it?
Uh-huh. This card is weird. It's worded so weird.
Yep. Target player gains control of up to 3 target non-attacking creatures until end of turn. It lets you decide which player's creatures another player could block with, including yourself. So you can take someone else's creatures to block a bunch of stuff. You can also ruin someone else's Alpha Strike on another opponent.
Yes. Still weird.
intensely weird.
Yeah. Speaking of weird cards, why does this card exist? Okay. Here's my rant about cards I don't like. This Dulcet Sirens.
Okay.
It's blue and 2 for a 1/3 tap. Target creature attacks target opponent this turn if able, and has morph for some weird reason.
Because morph. I have no idea why it has morph. This is that I've got nothing for it. Okay.
Like, so I get that it's kind of a surprise attack. Like, this card just is weird. Like, this could be a merfolk and it'd be okay. This card, you could get rid of the type siren, put merfolk and get rid of the morph, and I'd be totally okay with this card.
Yeah, well, I guess the morph is them, like, hiding under the water until it's too late. Like, you just see a shape in the water kind of thing. I don't know.
Yeah, boo.
Yeah.
That and this card really, like, I can make your Ewit go on suicide runs, or I can make sure you don't attack me.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. It's an interesting card.
Admittedly, sending people's Eldrazi different directions
mm-hmm.
is kind of fun, but...
It's also a way in Ruhan to pick your targets. So there's that.
True. That is a way to use this card.
Mm-hmm. We've got
Exclude has new art that's really good.
Yeah, the new art's pretty cool in it. I don't have time for you right now.
Yeah.
From Teferi. That's pretty cool. I like that they reprinted Fool's Demise. This is a weird and wonderful card.
Yeah, when it dies, return it to under your control. And then when Fool's Demise is put into your graveyard, return Fool's Demise to its owner's hand.
Yeah, it basically lets you call dibs on any creature on the battlefield when it dies, and then whenever the creature dies and Fool's Demise goes to the graveyard, you get it back.
Yep. It's kind of a neat card.
Very neat. It's like the ultimate, like, slow roll I'm gonna take. It's the world's slowest insurrection. Eventually, I will have control of all creatures on the battlefield. Eventually.
Yep. Once they all die.
So now we get to the blue offering, Intellectual Offering. It's a 4 and a blue instant. Choose an opponent. You and that player each draw 3 cards. And then choose an opponent. Untap all non-land permanents you control and all non-land permanents that player controls. 5 mana, instant speed. You and target player draw 3 cards. It's pretty good.
Disagree.
Well, it's... You don't like giving people cards.
You know me so well.
I was going to say, if you are planning to give people cards in the first place, it's a pretty good card.
Sure. This is another Nekusar card.
Yes, it is another Nekusar card.
That's not my reason why I hate it. I don't hate every card that can go in a Nekusar deck, because I'd hate a great portion of Magic cards. But, like, you're in blue, the color that draws cards. You don't need to give your opponent to draw three cards for five mana. And that second ability is pretty underwhelming. Like, give all your dudes pseudo-vigilance, like, unless you're doing some dorky combo-esque thing, I can't imagine why that untapping all your non-land permanents is that exciting for a blue deck.
Yeah, you need a lot of mana rocks before that's worth it. Yeah,
or a second color. Mm-hmm. Like, don't get me wrong, if I'm untapping, I don't know, a bunch of green or red things, maybe, but...
Yeah.
But giving an opponent three cards to untap all my crap, I'm not on that plan.
Nope! And now we're moving down. Okay, can we talk about the blue card that excites me in this set? Because there's always one. Can we talk about Reef Worm?
Yes, let's talk about Reef Worm.
Reef Worm is the coolest design card I've seen in a while, and its tokens are amazing. Reef Worm is a 4-mana 0/1, and when it dies, you put a 3/3 blue fish creature token onto the battlefield, and that fish creature has the ability, when this creature dies, put a 6/6 blue whale creature token onto the battlefield. That has the ability, when this creature dies, put a 9/9 blue kraken onto the battlefield. And you can only see the art, if you're following along in the card image gallery, you can only see the art for Reef Worm, but you can see that fish in the background. On all of the tokens, you can see the creature that eats it in the background. So on the fish, you see the whale, and on the whale, you see the kraken. And then on the kraken's token, the kraken is just eating a ship, because nothing eats the kraken.
Yep. This thing is cool. It tells a whole story on a card.
Mm-hmm.
It's decently powerful, in that you eventually have to deal with it. Admittedly, you're one Aether Adept from a very bad day.
Yeah, that's fair.
But...
The thing that is cool about this card is that it actually can be pretty powerful in the right circumstances. If you're running any kind of deck that likes sacrificing or recurring creatures, then you have four separate Death Enter the Battlefield triggers, which is really awesome, and the increasing power is relevant if you're playing red. Can you imagine playing this card with, like, Warstorm Surge and a Sacrifice Outlet?
Yeah, just... 9, 15, 18 damage to you if I go all out? Yeah.
Yeah, 18 instant damage if I want it to be that. Like, it is a very cool, very, breakable card.
Sure.
Like, you look at it and you go, this card was designed very well, and I know I could do some crazy plays with it.
Yeah, super fun. Alright, scrolling right along. Rite of Replication got a reprint. Good call.
Mm-hmm.
There's a bunch of boring sphinxes here.
Not a fan of the sphinxes.
Oh, I get they had to put X number of big creatures in here to make mm-hmm. Stitcher Girl playable. But Jwar Jwar, Sphinx of Ngozi, and Sphinx of Uthun, the only one that's interesting to me is Sphinx of Factor Fiction.
Yeah. I like the Blue Lieutenant a lot. I think he's kind of not been getting the love he deserves. It's 5 mana for a Kraken. He's a 5/5 Kraken, Storm Surge Kraken, and he has Hexproof. And his lieutenant ability is, as long as you control your commander, he gets +2/+2 and has whenever Storm Surge Kraken becomes blocked, you draw two cards. I think this is really cool.
Which is convenient, because most people want to block a 7/7.
Exactly. As long as you control your general, it's a damned if you do, damned if you don't for your opponent. If they block him, you get two cards and you do what a blue deck loves to do best. If they don't block him, they're taking 7 damage.
Yeah.
And he's got Hexproof, so they can't just throw a spot removal spell at him. He's the only lieutenant creature that's protected.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the flavor text about Krakens being smart and evil is pretty cool, too. Yeah, no, this is a Kraken I would play. Put it on the list, Noel.
Guess what you're getting for Christmas.
there's a Willbender in this deck, because they had morph creatures.
It's always Willbender.
It's always Willbender.
There's a Turn to Frog, which will matter because I'm going to make a joke in the green section. I need everyone to keep that card in the back of their mind.
Planting the seeds now. This is foreshadowing, folks.
Pretty much. And if you haven't heard the joke yet, it's because you haven't listened to the 7 or 8 other set reviews that are out about this card.
And then there is Well of Ideas, which is a new Nekusar enchantment.
Yep. Blue and 5. When it enters the battlefield, draw 2 cards. At the beginning of each player's draw step, that player draws an additional card. At the beginning of your up draw step, draw 2 additional cards.
So it's card advantage Howling Mine.
I'm almost willing to play this card.
If it costs 4, you'd play it, I think.
If it costs 5, I'd probably play it. Because it's a divination when it comes into play. Mm-hmm. So if it gets blown up right away, I'm not just screwed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 6 mana to draw 2 cards is no value, but, you know, if the worst case, you know, if I'm playing, especially if you're playing 1v1, this is draw 4 cards to their 1.
Absolutely. This is a pretty cool card. And it's also one, if it eats a removal spell, you've already gotten, it's already replaced itself and drawn you a card, which is nice.
Mm-hmm. That being said, I'm still, like, the blue does not need these kind of effects.
Mm-hmm.
Like, blue has Blue Sun Zenith to let us draw a million cards. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, I can draw the same 4 cards off Blue Sun Zenith for the same mana.
Once again, this is a Nekusar card.
Yep.
Moving down, we're into black. First card is a card I was super excited they reprinted. I love me Abyssal Persecutor. I think he's great. He's 4 mana for a 6/6 flying trample. You can't win the game and your opponent can't lose the game. Such a neat card. Such good art. I love this card. I'm all over this card.
This card causes weird games.
Oh, yeah.
I like that. Like, I love the opponent at -4 when another player has the Abyssal Persecutor, who's now doing everything he can to keep the Abyssal Persecutor alive long enough to win.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that kind of game state. I've created that bunch of those game states. That being said, I have played Abyssal Persecutor quite a bit. I have never had a game where I played him and my opponents didn't kill him within, like, a turn where I didn't win the game. Because a 6/6 flying trample on turn 4 is vicious.
Yeah.
And that whole, like, as long as he's alive, your opponent can't lose. Yeah, that's really easy to circumvent.
Yeah, here, watch the sudden trick. Or people do it accidentally by casting humility, that's fun too.
Oh yeah.
All the time.
Aether Snap's, I really like that they put this in this deck, because Aether Snap is a wrath for the Planeswalkers.
Yep, especially also that it kills all the tokens, which when you're playing these, like, 3 of these decks are very token-focused.
Mm-hmm.
And so having this in here was also good.
Yeah, I like the fact that if you're scrolling down these lists, like, all these reprints, stuff like Black Sun Zenith, Crypt Ghast, and Blood Gift Demon, these are, like, go-to mono-black cards. Like, you want them in all black decks. Yeah. So I love that they put them in here.
Yeah, Butcher, Disciple, there's a lot of good Drowna. Alright, so all the good... There's a bunch of good black cards. Start with the letter D, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
But let's talk about Demon of Wailing Agonies. This is the black lieutenant.
Also really like this guy. Yeah. I'll say that right now.
Black 3, he's a 4/4 flyer. As long as you control your commander, it gets +2/+2, and when this creature deals combat damage to a player, that player sacks a creature.
You don't want to get hit by this guy.
Yep, this card is... And here's the nice part, is this card is actually okay when you don't have your commander. Like, a 4/4 flyer for 5 is unexciting, but not terrible.
Yeah, no, I think that there is enough good demons in this deck to justify making a, like, demon-themed deck if you want to. It's so cool. The 4/4 flyer is... It's perfectly fair, but that 6/6 evasive creature that your opponent desperately doesn't want to get hit by is awesome.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, no, this is another one of the lieutenant cards that just, like, totally nails it for me. That's just such an ugly effect.
Yeah. Shooting down the list, Flesh Carver. I didn't know you won an Invitational, Eric.
But this card, I did, but I already designed Ankle Shanker. this card is super, super cool. The first thing I did was I looked at this card and I was like, Barrels loves this card.
Barrels loves this card. I feel like your old Lysolda deck would play this card.
100%, absolutely. 3 mana for a 2/2 with Intimidate. You can pay 1 in a black and sack another creature, put 2+1/+1 counters on him, and when he dies, put an XX black horror creature token onto the battlefield where X is its power. It's kill me twice. If you have any way of making this guy big, he's kill my giant creature twice.
Yep.
And you can actually make a bigger creature. If he's equipped with a sword and he dies, is his power count as 4?
Yep.
So then you have a 4/4 that you then equip with a sword, which becomes a 6/6?
Uh-huh.
That's scary!
Yeah.
This is a really exciting, really fun new card.
Yeah.
Grave Titan is, again, reprinting a bunch of the Titans, which I found to be really cool.
Mm-hmm.
We got Grey Merchant of Asphodel and Liliana's Reaver, both cards that I think are must-plays in black decks. And we have the new Black Offering, so let's take a look at this.
Sure. Go ahead. You can read this one.
You go ahead.
Okay. Infernal Offering, one. Black and 4. Choose an opponent. You and that player each sack a creature. Each opponent who sacks a creature this way draws 2 cards. Choose an opponent. Return a creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield. Then that player returns a creature card from his or her graveyard to the battlefield.
This card's awesome.
This card's great because I don't have to play fair with it.
No, you can be like, okay, this guy who has nothing but a bird in his graveyard can have his bird back, and I'm going to flicker my creature and draw 2 cards.
You still have to sack a dude if you want the cards. It doesn't say target creature.
Oh, it's return a creature.
Oh, yeah, return a creature from the graveyard to your battlefield. Yeah, so you can, effectively.
You can flicker your creature. Yeah. You can be like, hey, he's in the, oh, he's back out again. He just took a little stroll in the cemetery, that's all.
Yeah. Oh, Andy has an ETB trigger.
Oh my god, doing this to a Solemn Simulacrum would be so much value.
Yeah, there's...
How much, draw 3 cards, get a new land.
Oh. Yeah. Opponent sacks a creature.
Opponent sacks a creature. That's so mean. Oh, I love it. That's so great.
I also like that none of these target.
Yeah, that's, this still isn't my favorite one, though. We're getting to my favorite one soon.
Yeah, I know what's coming. Let's keep talking about exciting black cards in Malicious Affliction.
Oh, this card is so cool.
Mm-hmm. This card is just this is a utility card, but super solid. It's double black. Destroy target non-black creature, unless it has Morbid when you cast it, in which case, kill 2.
Yeah, and this is one of those cards that Wizards did perfectly, where it's like, I will never be sad that I cast this card and didn't get full value. I'm gonna try and play to get full value out of it, but if I can't do it, that's fine, because 2 mana to kill a non-black creature is perfectly acceptable.
Yep. I have played Doomblade in decks before. It's not necessarily the greatest card, but it's usable.
Yep, and this is the world's best Doomblade.
Mm-hmm.
Moving down, why do they keep reprinting Nantuko Shade? No one cares.
That card used to be good. That card used to be so good.
Yeah, it's because of people like you who remember how good it was. Huh?
Yeah, nostalgia.
Necromantic Selection. Ouch.
Yeah, 7 mana, 3 black and 4. Destroy all creatures and return a creature card from your graveyard this way to the battlefield under your control. It's a black zombie in addition to its other colors and types. Exile this card.
Really? Ouch. Like, jeez.
Yeah.
I'm going to pick the best creature, I'm going to keep it, and then everyone else gets everything blown up.
Yep. For a 7 mana wrath, though, it better do that.
That's fair. It is very expensive. It kind of reminds me of... what's that spell from the Theros block? It was the cycle, and the black one was the, like, 7 mana reanimate, but make the card indestructible.
Oh, Faded something.
Oh, yeah, Faded Return.
Yeah, Faded Return.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of Faded Return, where it's like, it's basically a super expensive reanimate with a huge upside, but the upside is arguably worth the cost. Mm-hmm. In this case, it's wiping out everything else. I love this art on Necrotal. Just gonna say that right now.
I like the old one.
I really like this art.
I like the old Necrotal art. Anyway, Overseer of the Damned. This card is just a good value creature.
It's a good. It's expensive though, but it's good. 7 mana. It's a 7 mana demon. 5/2 black. It's got flying. It's a 5/5. When Overseer of the Damned enters the battlefield, you may destroy target creature. Whenever a non-token creature an opponent controls dies, put a 2/2 black zombie creature token onto the battlefield tapped. Super powerful effect.
Yeah, so it's really not. It's 7 mana for a 5/5 and a 2/2 tapped.
Yep, which is fair. It's 7 mana, 7 power. Mm-hmm. And then you also blow up a something, yeah, which is cool. And then if it sticks around, this will get totally out of control.
Yep. This card's bonkers if it's left alone.
Another fun card for Kalia players.
Yep.
Moving down, we've got...
We have a lot of, like, greatest hits cards, like Pestilence Demon, Pontiff of Light, Profane Command, Promise of Power.
Raving Dead is the other new card we can talk about. Man, that guy's kind of funny.
Yeah.
5 mana for a 2/6 with Death Touch. At the beginning of combat, he attacks opponents at random. He has to attack, and he attacks at random. And whenever he deals combat damage to a player, that player loses half of his or her life rounded down.
Yep.
So block with the creature you're going to lose or lose half your life.
Uh-huh. It's Ruhan's slightly more dead older brother.
Yeah. It's, one of Ruhan's zombified troops.
Yeah. That being said, I worry about actually connecting with this.
Yeah, but it's... Even if you don't connect, I think it's worth it. It's a 2/6 body with Death Touch, so it's going to be relatively difficult to kill, because mm-hmm. it's got that 6 toughness, and it's going to smoke most things it touches.
Mm-hmm.
Going down...
Note to self, find an interesting way to give that first strike.
Yeah. Find an interesting way to make it unblockable. Just, who put the Whispersoul cloak on the Raving Dead? Who gave him the cloak?
We need to talk about this. Spoils Zombie. Of Blood, aka your 1 mana black wrath insurance policy.
Yeah, this is really cute when your general is Geesa.
Yeah, this is also really cute if you're playing as Avenger of Zendikar players.
Mm-hmm. Put an XX black horror creature token onto the battlefield where X is the number of creatures that died this turn. This is another card that I could reasonably see myself running in Prosh because I just eat everything and then play it again.
Yep.
I mean, yeah, it's a very narrow category, but that you could do that. Mm-hmm. Hey, they reprinted Jump Kick Demon.
Jump Kick Demon?
Zathrid Demon?
Oh, yeah.
He's the Kung Fu Fighting Demon.
If we're gonna, okay, we're talking about pet cards. Sudden Spoiling is one of mine.
Sudden Spoiling's a pretty good card. I don't think it should be a pet card. It's just a good card.
More people should play that card. It's vastly underplayed. Wake the Dead is another one of these weird cards that takes forever to figure out what it does.
Yeah, basically just, bring back as many creatures from your graveyard, but only to block.
Yeah, only during combat on an opponent's turn.
So to block.
To block or to, like, I have a deck I want this in right away. It's my blue-black, low-curve, make-Bob-playable triggers deck.
Oh, yeah, in an Enter the Battlefield triggers deck, this is just disgusting.
Yeah, like, if I bring back Sadbot, Tidehollow Strix, if you want to get real filthy, bring back Deadeye Navigator, then blink Deadeye Navigator so it's not dead.
Mm-hmm. There's lots of stuff you could get a bunch of value on. Sadbot's obviously the biggest one, but anything Necrotal.
Yeah, any 187, any, you know, if you're in green, any Ramp Dude, like...
All sorts of fun stuff.
Yeah, this card is actually, like, yes, it's a kind of a weird combat trick, but it's mm-hmm. way more exciting if you think of all the cool stuff. You have enough dudes to make it matter.
Exactly. It's all about the guys you bring back and the volume you can get. If you cast this late game, like those Enter the Battlefields and triggers might be enough to vault you ahead of everyone else easily.
Sure. Or bring back Deranged Hermit and who brings any guy that brings friends to the party, any army in a can, like.
Absolutely. Anything that generates tokens, anything that makes, like, your opponents discard when it enters the battlefield, anything like that. Fleshbag Marauder, all sorts of nasty stuff.
Mm-hmm. Then, scrolling down, Bitter Feud, this card is going to be underwhelming.
Yep, now we enter the red category, and we get to kind of a loser first. Bitter Feud is 5 mana for a red enchantment. As it enters the battlefield, choose 2 players. It's double damage to each other for 2 players.
Yeah. I'll give you a hint. That actually turns into 2 players don't attack each other and attack you instead.
Yep, that's one way it can go down. It's, it's just... And it's a little expensive.
Yeah. If you had a way to flash this in on somebody, if it had flash, it'd be hilarious.
Oh, yeah, because then you'd watch just combat math go all the way to hell.
Yep.
But, yeah, no, it's just kind of underwhelming. Thankfully, probably the only underwhelming new red card, or one of the only ones, I think.
Yeah, probably.
Cause right now we're going down to Fork Mage! My mage has a fork!
Yes, this card. This card I've already heard and seen it do just degenerate stupid stuff. We're talking, of course, of Dual Caster Mage.
Yep, 3 mana for a 2-2 with Flash when he enters the battlefield. Copy target instant or sorcery spell. You may choose new targets for the copy. I also like it's another card that's clearly from a certain plane. It's obviously meant to be from Theros. I think this is a really cool card.
Yep. So two stories I've seen with this card.
Okay.
I didn't get to actually play at a release event, but I went and watched one for a little while. Saw this copy of Praetor's Council.
That's terrifying!
Yeah. Also, especially when you have a Duretti deck that's already filling the yard with stuff.
That's really
also
gross. Yeah.
Read this one off of somebody's Tumblr. Somebody had Felden in play, this in their yard, and Begard and Hellkite. And somebody felt the need to kick to Rite of Replication, targeting their Frost Titan.
Oh no!
56,000 Begard and Hellkite triggers later.
Yeah, that's a little busted. Yeah, that's gross. This guy is really awesome. He's a nut. This is. I've always loved stuff like Fork and Wild Evocation and all that stuff, but I couldn't really justify putting them in my deck because I'm sitting around and waiting for my opponent to do something fun or for me to have enough mana to double up one of my spells. But the idea of having it on a body makes it so much more palatable.
Mm-hmm. And there's so much stupid stuff this is going to do, like mind twist you and you.
Yeah, no, it's super fun, and it's definitely it's one of those things where like Fork will catch people completely by surprise, and now this card is going to be ubiquitous enough, I think, that people are going to have to start really thinking about what spells they want to cast.
Mm-hmm.
Moving down, we've got Felden, who's awesome. They reprinted. Yeah, they reprinted Goblin Welder, which is huge.
Yay for that card.
Yeah, it's awesome. And then we have Impact Resonance.
Yet another card you have to read a dozen times before you figure out what it does.
Yeah, basically take the highest amount of damage that something did this turn. The biggest burn spell, the highest attacking creature. Then you get to copy it and divide that damage as you choose among any number of target creatures. I really wish this said creatures or planeswalkers.
Yeah, it could be creatures or planeswalkers and not be busted.
Exactly. However, the upside to this is that you're copying that huge amount of damage, and it's a 2-mana instant.
Yeah. That being said, it's more weird than good, I think. Like, because if you think about it, you're copying from a single source. So, odds of this killing somebody, like, yes, you might get, like, an Eldrazi trigger where you get 12 damage or something like that, but that's definitely living the dream.
Yeah.
More realistically, you're going to get 5 or 6 off of this.
I want to play it in my mono-red burn deck because then I can be like, I'm going to copy my Acidic Soil and deal damage to your creatures as well as you. But other than that, I don't see this getting much play.
Sure. Unlike the next card, which I think is sweet.
Insight Rebellion. 6 mana for each player, Insight Rebellion deals damage to that player and each creature that player controls equal to the number of creatures he or she controls. That could be unpleasant.
Yeah, against the token deck, or apparently the theme is Null complains about Avenger of Zendikar this episode, because it's like the 4th or 5th time I brought this card up, but do this to the Avenger of Zendikar player, or the Krenko mob boss player?
Oh yeah, this is a good way. This is cool because it's a good way to punish red decks, a lot of red token type decks. This is a good way to just mess them all the way up.
Yep.
Moving down, Scrap Mastery. How fun is this card?
Oh my gosh, this card is so much fun. This is a living death for artifacts.
Oh, and if you're playing against a non-artifact deck, it's such a blowout.
Yeah. Everybody's unexcited because they get their Soul Ring back, and I get back all the stuff.
Hey, Mindslaver's back on the battlefield. Who's ready to give that another spin?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, this card is super, super cool. And I think something like this was overdue. I'm glad it's in red and not blue.
Mm-hmm.
Moving down, we get to Tyrant's Familiar, which is the Red Lieutenant. It's a 5/5 dragon with flying and haste for 7, so it's a little on the expensive side. However, as long as you control your commander, it gets +2/+2, and has whenever it attacks, it deals 7 damage to target creature defending player controls. So if you have your commander already out when you cast this card, you have a flying Hastings 7/7 dragon 4/7 that's gonna burn a blocker.
Yep.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, more like Karthus Tyrant of Jund's familiar.
Yeah, exactly. It's, yeah, it's super nasty. That's a lot of... It's one of those things where it's... If you don't have your commander out, this is the world's most expensive and worst Thundermaw Hellkite. If you do have your commander out, this is just a face full of ouch.
Yep. Okay, go ahead. This is the offering you like so much. Go ahead.
Okay. So, Volcanic Offering is 5 mana at instant speed. Destroy target non-basic land you don't control and target land, or target non-basic land of an opponent's choice that you don't control. Volcanic Offering deals 7 damage to target creature you don't control and 7 damage to target creature of an opponent's choice that you don't control. It's the offering that is literally impossible to hurt you.
Yes, and that's the reason I'm okay with it too. Like, I'm gonna get rid of 2 problematic lands and probably 2 dudes.
This card is so... This is one of the cards that I tested before the set actually came out. I proxied it up. And I played it in a 2-player game. Now, I'm gonna ask you for a rules question, Noel, to make
sure
I played
the same. They can choose the same thing.
Exactly. So that's what I thought, that's how we played it out, because I was like, this would be broken otherwise. But even still, it was on turn, like, 4 or 5, and I blew up my opponent's Ancient Tomb and his Bird of Paradise. I cost him 3 mana with 1 5 mana instant.
Sure. Yeah, you know, you're gonna see, and how often do you see, gosh, I wish I could get rid of that guy's Mazavith and that guy's Cabal Coffers, or...
Yeah.
You know, there's 2 creatures on the board that I wish weren't here. Here's your chance to play a little politics and get rid of them both.
You can also, if you're at a 4-player table, you can play politics with the guy beside you to hit the 2 guys across from you. Because you get to pick which opponent chooses.
Uh-huh.
And it doesn't have to be someone whose land you blew up. This is by far the best offering, I think, and even, like, outside of that cycle, if you're just playing red, I think you have to give this card a shot, because it's super strong, even in 1v1. Deal 7 damage to a creature and destroy target non-basic land. Think of it like a reverse Solemn. It's just such a nasty swing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very powerful card.
Very, very powerful card. Moving on to a slightly less powerful card, Warmonger Hellkite. This is an ugly dragon.
Yeah. And it's really, it's kind of, okay, I will say that I like one of the abilities on it. It's a 6 mana, 2 red and 4, 5/5 flyer. All creatures attack this combat if able.
Each combat if able.
And then red and 1 to give attacking creatures +1/+0. I will say that I like forcing people's utility dudes to attack.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's like, here, swing with your E-Witness, your Wood Elves, and your Raffello's Llanowar Emissary. Do it.
Sure. But it's, outside of that, it's not very good.
if you were going wide with tokens, maybe, because the red and 1 pump for all your attacking dudes isn't bad.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like we're working pretty hard to make a bad card good.
Yeah, exactly. This just is not that impressive a card. Alrighty, so now we're into the green deck, the Man Does Wizards Love Elves deck.
Yeah, I mean, it's not bad, though. Like, this deck is actually pretty good and has some killer cards in it.
Absolutely. So, shall we get started?
Yeah, keep rolling down. Creeper Hulk's the first one I want to talk about.
Creeper Hulk is a super cool card with a ability that's been printed before that really should not be underestimated.
Yeah. It's green-green 3 for a plant elemental. It's 5/5 Trampler itself. So, 5/5 Trampler for 5 already isn't bad. Then it has this little line on it. Green and 1, until end of turn, target creature you control has base power toughness 5/5 and gains trample.
Yes.
So okay. You know all these stupid little elves this deck just poops out?
Mm-hmm.
They're all 5/5s.
What I think is the really cool part about it is, you think elves, I think hydras.
Sure.
Yeah, anything that already has a bunch of +1/+1 counters on it, just got 5 more power, and the ability to run its damage right over the top of you, which I think is super cool.
Yeah. This card is very good.
It's very, very good. Moving on, we've got a reprint of Desert Twister. Not many people knew that green had a Vindicate.
Yeah, it's just really, really expensive.
Yep.
But actually has a Twister on it this time.
Yeah. I'm still going to play my other one, because my other one is shiny. But this is pretty cool.
Fair enough. Then we're going to go through... There's an entire elf deck here. I promise.
Yeah, we aren't going to talk about the elves. There's a lot of elves.
Yep.
We're going to skip right past a whole pile of them and go to Grave Sifter.
Yep.
Six mana for a 5/7.
Yeah. This is a cool tribal card. This is a, it's an elemental beast. When it enters the battlefield, each player chooses a creature type and turns any number of cards of that type from his or her graveyard to his or her hand.
Exactly. It's kind of a patriarch's bidding, but instead of going to the battlefield, it goes to your hand.
Yeah, and it comes with a 5/7 dude.
Which is pretty cool. I also like, again, they're using the art to clearly indicate where it's from. This thing's from Innistrad. It's got a tombstone, an Avacyn-decorated tombstone. It's a very Innistrad-flavored card, and it's visually from Innistrad. I like the fact that they're landmarking these cards.
Sure. This card is also... very powerful in that, you know, this is in an elf deck. It's got two relevant creature types. Like, Horde of Notions loves this thing.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of green tribal anything is going to really appreciate this. Even, like, a Roshin Meanderer deck might play it to get its Hydras back. Like, sure. this is a very solid card.
Mm-hmm.
It is symmetrical. Your opponents do get value out of it, so keep that in mind.
Yeah, but if you're playing this, you're hopefully tribaling harder than anybody else is tribaling.
That's fair. But your opponent will get back their best creature.
Yep.
Moving down past more elves, there are a lot of good elves in here. If you want to make an elf tribal deck, you should start by picking this up. Yeah. Absolutely.
Immaculate Magistrate, Imperious Perfect, Draga Warcaller. There's a lot of good elves. Let's talk about this card. This
Lifeblood
Hydra makes me so happy.
Remember how I said I really like Krakens and Leviathans? Yeah. I really, really like Hydras.
I don't like a lot of Hydras, but I like this one.
This is a nasty friggin' Hydra. So, 3 green and X. Heavy on the green, but it's got trample, so it's gonna be your maximum mana -3 with trample.
Quit stalling, get to the good part.
Okay. Enters the battlefield with X +1/+1 counters. That's what you're talking about, Roll. Right, Noel? That's what you're excited about?
Shut up, Eric.
When Lifeblood Hydra dies, you gain life and draw cards equal to its power. It has a built-in momentous fault.
Yeah. You know what this is? This is Wizards going, huh, you know what was a pretty dumb card? Sphinx's Revelation. You know what that card needs? Trample.
I think that's an absolutely fair assessment.
Like, this card is great. It's green card draw. You know, you are, like, yeah, like you said, you know, can you imagine sacking this to Momentous Fall?
Oh my god. Can you imagine? There's so much that you should never do with this card. It's just too broken.
All of the cards. Yeah.
Admittedly,
the one trick they've got is you have to cast it first, but that's okay. I can cast a Sphinx's Revelation.
I love this. I love how Wizards seems to have finally nailed down, like, printing Hydras that people want to play. And, this card is just, it's scary. There's going to be a lot of times when you're playing EDH that this card is going to come down and ruin someone's day.
Yeah. And even if I'm just drawing 4 cards, that's still okay. Like, I'll hang around with a 4/4 trampler for a while that when it dies, I draw 4 cards.
Absolutely. Can you imagine getting this out when you're already swinging with Colonian Hydra?
Ugh.
I'm just saying. Yeah. That's a strong return on investment.
Yeah, that's a beautiful, beautiful thing. Hello, doubling season.
Speaking of beautiful, beautiful things, they reprinted Praetor's Council!
They did, which is a card that's massively underplayed.
Yeah, oh my god. I like this better than Yawgmoth's Will.
I wouldn't go necessarily that far, but you're right. Going to be able to go, hey, I'm gonna go ahead and just redraw all the cards I drew.
Mm-hmm. This card to me, Yawgmoth's Will give you a huge amount of advantage. But to me, Yawgmoth's Will is, I'm gonna play this in the late game, get a huge amount of advantage, now you get a chance to recover from this. To me, Praetor's counsel is, I'm going to play this in the late game. You have a turn to kill me.
Yep.
It's like, you're painting a bullseye in your head. You're like, kill me now, because if it gets around to my next turn, I'm about to ruin your entire day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Moving down, we've got a Reclamation Sage, Rampaging
Primordial Sage.
Primordial Sage. That was an uncommon card to see, but I'm not a terrible fan of it.
Oh, I actually like that card, but...
I think it's okay. Siege Behemoth is the green lieutenant. No, he's not. This is the new green card, though. He's 7 mana, 7/4 with Hexproof.
Yep.
Little weak on the butt, but he's got Hexproof. And then as long as he's attacking, for each creature you control, you may have that creature assign its combat damage as though it weren't blocked. He is a very powerful Alpha Strike enabler.
Yeah, all of your cards are Thorn Elementals. This card's scary.
This is going to be one of those cards where it comes down and your opponents are going to be like, we have to stop it before it passes around the table.
Yep, this has to die this turn or I'm going to kill a player.
I give my stuff Uber Trample!
Yeah.
Okay, so how do you feel about Song of the Dryads?
Turn to log!
You will be my lumber!
This card is sweet.
I think it's good.
This card, I wonder if this card is better or worse than Beast Within.
I think it's worse than Beast Within. I really do.
There's a lot of times when where I'm more happy handing a forest to somebody than a 3/3 beast.
I think that it is worse than Beast Within because it's reversible.
True. And you can also, this card is still very, very good.
I agree. Like, I still think it's very, very good.
Yeah, this can hit a planeswalker, this can hit a general, this can hit a giant threat, and now it's a forest.
Yeah, I really like it. I think the debate with this card is not whether or not it's good, it's what cards is it better or worse than.
Sure. This is better than the aforementioned Desert Twister in my mind.
I would play it over Desert Twister. To me, the big stopping point is whether I would be willing to play it over Ramble Crush. Like, do I... 1 mana less, and it can target creatures for the trade-off that it can be removed and it's giving them a land.
I think I'd still play over Bramble Crush.
Yeah, it's a toss-up for me. Obvious solution, play both.
Yeah.
We get to the green offering. You want to read this one?
Sure. Choose an opponent. You and that a player each put X green tree folk, or put an XX green tree folk creature onto the battlefield. Choose an opponent. You and that opponent each put X 1/1 green elf warrior creatures onto the battlefield. This one can't be broken, and therefore is meh.
See, you say that, but
Without use of, like, engineered plague or something like that, or if you're just trying to start a fight between two people.
Warstorm Surge.
Okay, fair.
Because the first thing I thought of is, like, what are some green decks I really like to have a... Remember when Throwmok was really popular? Throwmok would have loved this card.
Yeah, fair.
This is like, it's like, okay, I'm going to deal double X damage to target player, and also I get to keep this stuff. I think it's a really cool card. I think it's cool in design. Whether or not it's super good is arguable, but I think it's a very cool card.
Yeah.
Can we stop and just admire how gorgeous Sylvan Safekeeper is?
Yep. Beautiful flowing hair.
Also a card that I never had and always wanted. So now I have shored that up thanks to this set.
Yep.
In a new border with the pretty art and just gazing longingly into his... Okay, we should move on.
Yep. sexy T-Rexy's here.
Thunderfoot Baeloth?
Yeah, that's the next one to talk about.
Yeah, he is a sexy T-Rex.
No, sexy T-Rexy's T-Rexodon.
Oh, Terastodon? He's an elephant!
Alright, anyway, there's Thunderfoot Baeloth here, which I like a lot, actually. I wish this had Hexproof, but go ahead.
I can't unsee the T-Rex now. He looks like a T-Rex to me. Rah. Why wasn't he a dinosaur?
I don't
okay.
think dinosaur's a creature type, is it?
It should be. Thunderfoot Baeloth is a 6-mana 5/5 with Trample. As long as you control your commander, Thunderfoot Baeloth gets +2/+2, and other creatures you control get +2/+2, and have Trample. As long as you control your commander, he's an Alpha Strike enabler.
Yep, and I feel like there's going to be a lot of times where this guy's a trap.
How do you mean?
Like, you're gonna swing in going, haha, got you, and they're gonna Doomblade this and go, no, got you!
I feel like this will be one of the new, I go get Avenger of Zendikar and X with Tooth and Nail.
Sure.
I think Thunderfoot Baeloth really, really likes to have the Avenger of Zendikar come out at the same time.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but he's really solid. Having, once again, depends on how sturdy your commander is, because if you can keep him as a 7-7 that gives all your entire team +2/+2 and trample, for 6 mana, that's a steal.
Yeah, you're gonna win the game in very short order.
Mm-hmm. And then we get to Titania, Protector of Argoth. So I've got a story about Titania.
Okay.
Remember when I said that, I didn't know how I felt about her and I kinda had to see her in action?
Uh-huh.
I saw her in action. Uh-huh. I think I'm in love. Because I have the full fetch mana base for my tricolor decks. So this card is invariably for me. I pay 5 mana, I get 2 5/3s, and then I either strip another one of my opponent's lands, or I ramp. In either case, she's 1 mana more for Super Solemn. I get 2 creatures and a land that's gonna get me some kind of advantage.
Yup.
Oh, she's just so good. So good!
Uh-huh.
And if you have Life from the Loam going on at the same time, then just forget about it.
Yeah. Play this card with Dust Bowl one time.
And this was another one where I'm like, you know what, I want someone to Tooth and Nail her in Terastodon and be like, I have 3 3/3s, a 9/9, and 4 5/3s. Look at my build-a-board!
Yep. 1 mana, Concordant Crossroads, swing.
Yep. She's super, super strong. I still want to see the deck built around her. I don't know if there's enough mono-green Destroy My Own Land stuff to support that, but she is... I can confirm that she is scary. She functions incredibly well. She's a huge just value generator, and God help you if your opponent has this out and then plays Scapeshift.
Yeah. Oh, that's an idea, too.
Yeah, it is.
I keep thinking about building this as a funsies deck, but...
You need to invest in the right kind of cards for it to work, but I think that when it's going to work, it's going to really work.
Yeah. New Tornado Elemental art.
Mm-hmm. Do we care about the new Tornado Elemental art? Because I don't really.
I've played Tornado Elemental in a deck and not felt bad about it before. No, it's in Rogthar, actually, as a Flyer Hater.
Okay, that's fair. I prefer different Flyer Haters. I prefer Arbor Colossus and Silkwing Spider to this.
Fair enough. Wave of Mountain Dew! It's a big, big wave of Ecto Cooler coming down the road at you.
Surf's up, dude! I'm picturing the most, like, extreme dude Mountain Dew drinkers from, like, stereotyped from the 90s, just seeing this coming and being like, ah!
Yep, you can imagine the Ninja Turtles surfing on this card, and
it says something about us that you went to Mountain Dew and I went to Monster Blood from the Goosebumps. yes.
Alright, so this card is...
We'll never forget the day that the Hulk drank the entire Atlantic Ocean.
Each player sacks all artifacts, creatures, and non-basic lands. For each land sacrificed this way, its controller may search for a basic land and put it onto the battlefield tapped. Yep. This is another shut-up five-color.
Yeah, destroy all artifacts, enchantments, and non-basics, and be nice to the... It's another one of those, like, I don't like these cards, where it's like, I'm going to hate out the people who play too many non-basics, but I'm going to hate them gently. I'm going to let them replace them with basics. So you have to go, like, punish them. Play Ruination. If someone's playing that many non-basics, it's because they're playing multicolors, so they can get the best cards in those multiple colors. Don't feel bad about blowing up their mana base.
Yeah.
I think been only blown out by Ruination once when I was playing Prosh, and I felt fine about it, because that's the risk you take.
Mm-hmm. Moving along, Well-Wisher has ugly new art.
It's weird. Not particularly good looking.
Whirlwind also has, is that new art or just old art I've never seen?
I think that's old art. Okay. It's unremarkable in any case. Yeah. We've got Wolfbriar Elemental reprinted. Wolf Caller's Howl, new enchantment. 4 mana, at the beginning of your upkeep, put X22 green wolf creature tokens onto the battlefield, where X is the number of your opponents with 4 or more cards in hand. This is a weird, like, green-black vice card.
Yeah, it's green's take on black vice, which is fine.
Mm-hmm.
On average, you know, you'll probably get 1 or 2 wolves in upkeep with this. That's not terrible.
I really wish it was the number of cards
over four.
Because then it could get broken when your opponent plays like Sphinx Revs or something.
Yeah, but that's gonna cost 1 million mana to make it balanced, and I feel like this is better.
All right.
Wood Elves is actually an elf that you don't just play in elf decks.
Yeah, Wood Elves is really solid into the battlefield value, and then we've got another elf card, and that's it. I could totally make an elf deck now.
Yep. Let's head into the artifacts.
There's a lot of really cool artifacts.
Yeah, we'll try to keep this moving along, though, because we're starting to run a little long.
Yep.
Assault Suit. this card is cool. Like, this card does funny things with commander rules, which I kind of like.
Yeah, would you like to borrow my Juggernaut?
Yeah. It gives +2/+2 and can't attack you or a creature you control and can't be sacrificed.
Yep. That is, and because of the haste, you can just hand it around to everybody. Everyone gets a chance to swing with it.
The second ability is at the beginning of each opponent's upkeep, you can have that player gain control of equipped creature. So if you do, untap it.
Yep. It's playing hot potato with your creature, and once again, it's one of those things where you're giving your opponents an advantage that they can't use against you, which I think is big.
Now, admittedly, you never get it back, so think before you swing.
Mm-hmm. At the beginning of each opponent's upkeep, you may have that player gain control of equipped creature, and yeah, you only get to pass it on once.
Yep.
Again, but like, there's a lot of cards that got printed between this and M15 that Zedru is totally in love with.
Yep.
Zedru loves her assault suit.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on, I just want to stop on Bottle Gnomes to say Bottle Gnomes got reprinted. They are as charming now as they were then. Moving along.
Tasty.
Yeah.
Commander's Sphere, I like this card a lot.
Commander's Sphere, I thought the first time that it was just a Mind Stone. I didn't realize that you didn't have to pay mana to sack it and draw a card. I think that's huge.
Yeah, it's just tap to add a mana of any mana in your commander's color identity and sack it to draw a card.
You could do both on the same turn.
Yep, done that numerous times.
Yeah, it's seems really, really cool.
Yep.
I haven't had a chance to really make use of it yet, but I look forward to when I can.
Zedru's hat is in Crown of Doom.
Whenever it's a 3-mana artifact, whenever a creature attacks you or a planeswalker you control, it gets +2/+0 until end of turn, and you can pay 2 mana. Target player other than Crown of Doom's owner gains control of it. Activate this ability only during your turn. So you can pass the hat away, and then you're guaranteed to never get it back.
Uh-huh.
This is so good, I thought about running this in Prosh, because it's a good way to make my kobolds suddenly scary.
Yeah, like this, it's a pump.
Yep, it's a good way to roid everyone up.
Yep, this is doing the same thing that terrible Naya legend Kiji wanted to do, and makes it political, of sending it back and forth between people.
Yep.
It is the will of Zedru that you hang on to this hat.
Zedru has gifted this hat. You can pass it along to others, but never re-gift it to Zedru.
Yep. And which is key to that card, by the way. This would be terrible if all you did was pass it back and forth.
Oh, yeah. It would be unplayable.
Yep.
I love that they printed the medallions again with the new art. I'm so happy about this. These cards were impossible to find, and all the new arts are gorgeous.
Yeah, if somebody wants to buy me a Christmas present, if you could make me a copy of Jet Medallion, like...
What do you mean?
Like, that's a real... Like, I love the way the Jet Medallion set more than the others. Like, the...
Oh, you want the actual medallion?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, you want to wear it. I understand now.
Yep. I want me that. Junk Driver reprint is very good.
Junk Driver is another card that was impossible to get a hold of.
Yep.
Everyone had the mirror, no one had Junk Diver.
Yep.
Lore Seeker Stone, can we agree this sucks?
Yes. The cards that encourage you to get Hellbent are bad.
Yes. Are
almost universally a trap.
Moving down. Masterwork of Ingenuity, we have an equipment clone, and I would say it's bad if it didn't cost 1 mana.
Yeah, you can get it with Trinket Mage.
Oh my god, you can.
Yep, and it's an equipment itself, so you can get it with Stoneforge Mystic, too. Man. Why are you sighing at me?
I can't decide whether this card is good or not!
I don't know. Like, there's enough equipment that runs around in the typical EDH game, like, being able to just go surprise somebody who plays out a Sword of Protection in value.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, everyone plays, like, Skull Clamp and Lightning Greaves.
Yep. I think you will have a target for this pretty often. I don't know that it will always be worth the spot.
That's the thing. It's one of those things where I don't think the card's always going to be worth the spot, but when it does do its job, I think it's going to do its job amazingly.
Yep.
Going down, we've got a Battlesphere, lots of mirror stuff.
The really pretty Steve Argyle Nerves Disc art.
Mm-hmm.
Can I just say the Pearl Medallion looks really ugly?
I kind of like it.
Really? I'm not a fan.
I think that they did a good job making it look distinct from the others.
Fair enough. It looks like something out of the game, like Riven or Myst or...
Oh, yeah, definitely looks like art from Myst.
Yep.
Predator Flagship is back, which made me laugh.
Mm-hmm.
Scrolling down...
Sapphire Medallion and Ruby Medallion are also very pretty.
They are very pretty. I intensely like the Ruby Medallion art, which kind of makes me sad. I really like the Sapphire Medallion art.
Yeah, I like the Sapphire Medallion art.
Skull Clamp has some pretty sweet new art.
That's cool. And
it actually looks like a Skull Clamp now.
Yeah, not the Iron Ponytail.
Yeah.
That being said, I'll never get used to this as the Skull Clamp art. I'm so used to the Iron Ponytail that...
Yeah, it's just been around for forever. You're gonna flick by this the first time every time you're trying to Trinket Mage for your Skull Clamp.
Yep.
But yeah, no, I love that new art on it.
Everybody gets a Soul Ring. Which is good. Wizards, keep doing that.
Yeah, like, don't ever stop, guys. Yeah,
flood the market with Soul Rings, because that's a card that matters so much to so many Commander decks that having everybody with as many of them as they want is good.
Unstable Obelisk. How do you feel about having a Vindicate strapped to your mana rock?
You know, 7 mana for Vindicate's a lot, but not necessarily the worst thing ever, especially if you can recur it with something like Duretti.
Yeah, or if you just, like, if it just makes getting this mana rock super late in the game not dead.
Sure.
I really like it.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on. We have a Wyrmcoil Engine. Wizards reprinted Wyrmcoil. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Wizards. Arcane Lighthouse is kind of in that same, like, glaring spotlight tone of utility lands that deal with Hexproof and Shroud.
Except this is the cheapest it's ever been.
Yes, this is one tap, so it's 2 mana, essentially, to...
Yeah.
To just do one side.
And Shroud, and can't have Hexproof or Shroud. Just... This is the... Put it in your deck, you'll never be able to complain about Ural or Sigarda again.
Yep.
Moving on.
The Karoo lands are in here.
Which are gross. I hate those.
Flamekin Village is kind of cool.
Flamekin Village is a new one, and it gives stuff haste, which I love.
Yeah, it comes into play tap unless you reveal an elemental, which this will enter play tap most of the time.
Yeah, most of the time.
But tap for red, and then red and tap to give a creature haste till end of turn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like the flavor of giving it the elemental clause, making it like one of the old,
like the Lorwyn and tribal lands, yeah.
Yeah, I like that. Moving on, and I think we're kind of at the end of all, Myriad Landscape. So, guys, you can only fetch basic lands with Myriad Landscape.
Yeah, I got this card wrong too.
And you can only fetch 2 of the same kind of land.
Yeah, this card I thought was cool.
It's not as cool as you thought.
Yeah, I thought this was, I can go get Breeding Pool and take Hollow Fountain. I can.
Nope. No, it's get 2 forests or 2 islands, which isn't as cool.
Yeah. That being said, it's well, no, I guess it's not actually ramp.
No, well, not, well, it's not ramping ramp, by 1.
It, yeah, it's super slow grindy ramp, not ramp.
Yeah, it's not great. I would play it if it didn't enter the battlefield tapped.
Yeah, so would everybody. Then it's bonkers. But
yeah, no, it's not great. I think that's it. Yeah. So let's hurry on to the wrap up so the folks can go home. Where can they get a hold of you, Noel?
All right. My email is Noel Clausen, NoelClausson at gmail.com.
Welcome back to the 90s, Noel. We missed you.
Yeah. Woo. Now that's, let me try that again. NoelClausson at gmail.com. I'm also on Twitter at MTGNoel, And if you're looking for us on Facebook, the Facebook page is facebook.com/rivalsduel, and our RSS feed is feeds.feedburner.com/rivalsduel.
Yep, and I'm Eric Bonvy. You can find me at Eric Bonvy, or ericbonvy@gmail.com.
You screwed it up, too.
Yeah, we're in the same camp. ericbonvie@gmail.com. You can also get a hold of me at that Bonvy guy on Twitter. And yeah, keep the suggestions coming. So as we close out today, Noel, what did you think of Commander 2014? How do you feel? Thumbs up or thumbs down?
I love it. The decks are super fun to play against each other. You know, there's kind of some whiffs as far as individual cards, but all in all, the decks, pushing the envelope with Commander Walkers, getting some huge nostalgia factor cards in, love it, love it, love it, love it, love it. Two thumbs way, way up.
I couldn't agree more. I love it, and Red won this one. So that's always going to get a thumbs up in my book.
All right, I think we are out of here, everybody. Goodbye, everybody. Thanks for listening.